Joblessness hit a two-year low. Employers added 216,000 positions in March, knocking the unemployment rate down a smidge to 8.8%. Economist Mark Zandi of Moody's Analytics says companies are starting to see growing profits, and that's what's fueling the job gains.
You know, they understand they can't cut costs and cut jobs and still maintain their growth and profits in their stock price. They have to look for revenue opportunity, and that means they've got to hire.
The upbeat numbers out today from the Labor Department lifted stocks. The Dow closed up 57 points at 12,377. For the week, the index gained more than 150 points. The NASDAQ rose 9 points, settling at 2,790, and the S&P 500 added 7 points, ending at 1,332. Also in March, Ford sold more new vehicles than General Motors. With gas prices spiking, auto buyers snapped up fuel-efficient models such as the Fiesta subcompact and Explorer SUV. It's only the second time since 1998 that Ford beat its Detroit rival. This week, the Federal Reserve obeyed a court order and released thousands of pages of documents showing just how much money it lent to banks in the frenzied fall of 2008. New York State passed a budget on time. And the New York Stock Exchange got another bidder, even after making a deal to be acquired by a German exchange. We'll review the week's business and economic news now with Greg David, director of the Business and Economics Reporting Program at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. Welcome back, Greg.
Thank you, Amy.
The budget is now behind us. Everyone seems to feel it was a victory for Governor Cuomo, who got the education and health spending cuts he wanted. But the busy season in Albany is not over. Among the next items on the governor's desk, negotiating a new contract with state workers. Also, there's the future of rent regulations here in New York City and the proposed property tax cap, which got taken off the budget negotiation table. What can we expect in the months ahead?
The first thing we can expect is the legislature to push back. You know, they're not happy. They were neutered in the budget process. So the idea that Cuomo's just going to have his way is probably not going to happen. I read this great line in the Wall Street Journal today that Cuomo has mastered checkers. Now it's on to chess. And I think that just captures what's going to happen in Albany. Expect much more contentiousness over these issues: ethics reform, nonpartisan redistricting, maybe gay marriage.
Today, the NASDAQ Stock Exchange made an unsolicited bid for the New York Stock Exchange, which is already in fairly advanced talks with a German buyer. $11.3 billion is the offer. Here's NASDAQ CEO Bob Greffield on a call with reporters.
This transaction doesn't have a dual equity headquarters. The headquarters is in New York City. This will clearly be a direct benefit for the New York City as a financial center.
So NASDAQ is making the case for an American buyer, a buyer in New York. Are there other reasons the NASDAQ should be the ultimate buyer here?
Well, the more important reason from NASDAQ's position, and you should always beware when they wave the nationalist flag here, NASDAQ will be the odd person out if the NYSE merger with the Bourse goes ahead. It'll be way too small to compete. It'll probably have to be sold to someone else. It needs to get bigger. The exchange business is lousy. There's no money to be made in it. It's global. You have to be large. You have to be competing everywhere. This would create a viable American competitor. That's true. And that, I guess, would be good. And that's why NASDAQ wants to make this deal. It offered a big premium over the previous offer, but it's very risky for them. They've got $2 billion in debt, taken out a lot more to make this deal happen.
What do you think the possibilities are?
It's a big premium. I don't know what the German exchange wants to do. I wouldn't rule out NASDAQ here.
The Federal Reserve released more than 29,000 pages of documents that detail what banks got loans and for how much during the financial crisis. Turns out the Fed lent a lot to foreign banks, including one owned by a Libya authority that invests money for that country. What are we learning now about how the Fed handled the crisis?
This is my one-minute version of my class on the Fed. The Fed, there are two ways banks borrow from one another. They borrow from each other using the Fed funds rate. That's what they're supposed to do. Or they can borrow directly from the Fed's discount window. They're not supposed to do that. It's a sign of weakness. During the financial crisis, the banks weren't going to lend to each other. The only place in the whole world you could borrow from was the Fed. They lent everything they could to anyone who needed it. The Libyan bank, this Belgian bank got $30 billion at one point. Credit unions got money. They went to everybody in order to avoid a crisis and a meltdown worse than the Great Depression. I think that's the bottom line on this.
So quickly, if they lent to everybody, what's this stigma of weakness? If everybody got it, doesn't that eliminate that stigma?
Yes. And remember, this is backward looking. The question is, even as a journalist, I'm not sure we should know every day who's borrowing from the discount window. It could create financial panics. But good news. Glad for Bloomberg to dig this out. It's very important for the history record.
Greg David, director of the Business and Economics Reporting Program at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. Have a great weekend.
Same to you, Amy.
This is WNYC.